Hey Potters, welcome to Cosplay, the podcast for all things cosplay. This is episode 237.
Yay! Woohoo! She's doing them out of order now just to confuse me.
Yes.
Thanks, Amber.
Because I can.
Because you can, and that's okay. I do not fault you. I appreciate you keeping me on my toes.
We are celebrating uniqueness here on the show.
By confusing the hell out of Al.
No, I just want the montage at the end to show difference.
It's going to be so weird. It'll be same, 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 and then two episodes back to back of what? And then same, same, same.
And then the episode where you tripped me up by making funny faces at me.
I didn't mean to, but it was really entertaining. I'm not going to lie.
See, Potters, this is what you get after 9 years of podcasting about cosplay and costumes.
We start making funny faces at each other. Throw us off our game.
Speaking of, if this is your first time listening to the podcast, hi, I'm Amber.
Hi, I'm Valerie. Welcome.
And by our powers combined, we are Cospod, the cosplay podcast.
We're the Wonder Twins. We're almost there. Okay, we're close enough.
I can't see your fist on my little inset window here.
I know.
You're full-sized. I'm not.
Yeah, and on my screen, we're both equal sizes, but because I'm the one who's broadcasting it, it's a little bit different because I had to change the screens around for our videos to fit. So it's kind of entertaining.
I felt like, you know, a very short person next to Andre the Giant, because in real life, I am not very tall.
I think you're taller than I am.
I am.
Yeah.
But in the scheme of things, I'm actually the shortest member of my family.
Oh.
And I'm 5'7".
I'm like just a hair shy of that.
It basically means I don't fit into most commercial cosplay. Just a little bit too large. But that's okay. I make my own cosplay.
We make our own stuff. It's fine.
Indeed. And speaking of making my own stuff.
What you been working on?
So, unfortunately, not too much in the realm of cosplay, mostly because, like I said, my motorcycle broke down, and so I've been troubleshooting and dealing with that pretty much in the afternoons as soon as I get off work. And working on Present, which is about 90% done now. Yay! But what I wanted to show you guys for my cosplay updates is this fun little thing from Joann's. And for those who don't know, Hildy and Joe is a jewelry brand. They sell all sorts of jewelry components, beads, findings. And now they have started selling resin jewelry components where you can cast bezels and stuff with resin and then you harden them with UV light. And they're not the first to do this. There have actually been a couple of different companies, I think. In fact, I think that... why can I not think of the wig company Arda?
Mm.
Was selling UV components for a little bit. I don't know if they still do. But, you know, empty package, mostly because, like those hard plastic packages, you have to cut these open to get what was inside out and then just kind of tear at them. So I kind of shredded the package. I'm sorry. But what was in there are these nice little silicone molds. And there are four of them. 1, 2, 3, 4. And why these are cool is that these are for crystals. They're for crystal pendants. But since you guys have seen that I've had trouble casting crystals for, say, staves and other sorts of Renaissance-y type things, as soon as I saw this in the resin crafting section, I immediately bought it. And they have four different kinds. So there's a square, there's triangular prism, there's cylinder, and then there's hexagonal prism. And this is the one that I've been having trouble casting. It's not as big as I'd like it to be, but I can definitely use this.
Yeah.
Because I can always use this to build up a larger piece. And so I will be having fun with these. All sorts of fun, because now I can use them to embed electronics in it.
Yay! That's the important part there.
That's ultimately what I've been going for, because on my last SparkFun run, when I showed you guys what was in the box and I did my unboxing, I actually purchased spare super bright LEDs.
Good.
So that I can play with them in things like this. And of course, these being silicone molds, I won't need mold release. And that was actually the biggest problem when I was casting using the casting plaster, is the one time I forgot to put mold release in it is when I accidentally sealed it shut and I had to shatter it to get the piece back out, which I still have, incidentally. I have not cast since, mostly because I'm afraid to destroy it. I only have enough resin left for one casting. One. I can't mess up. So, with luck, what I intend to do with these as a trial piece is I still have 8 sticks of mod melts left. And mod melts, if you guys haven't seen them in stores, are basically glue sticks if they were made of the same sort of thermoplastic that you use for casting. So it will set much harder than hot glue. You still use it the same way. It just sets a lot harder. And so I've really wanted to use those to cast crystals. So that is going to hopefully be my project once I am done doing vehicle maintenance and getting my motorcycle back up and running this weekend, because that is first priority.
I am trying to remember, have we ever reviewed mod melts? I know we've talked about them. Okay, see, I couldn't remember if we actually went and did a full review on them. I know I've talked about them before, because I still have quite a hefty package that I like to go through every now and then.
They are very neat.
They are very neat.
I will say that generally when they show you mod melts being used in molds, and they sell their own custom molds that go with them too, if you want them. You don't have to use them that way. But they always show you this water clear stick. I have yet to see a water clear stick in the stores.
There isn't
one. They're yellow.
They're...
I've seen hot glue sticks that are more clear than those.
All of mine have been milky white. And they come out milky white. Now, I do know that they have different colors for them. Like, there's a glitter version. There is a clear version, but I have yet to I haven't seen a clear version in store before. So I think I need to actually go out and get a set. I've been able to use the milky white ones because you can actually paint over them. And they take paint really, really well, which I'm like, oh, great. I don't have to prime it. I can just paint on top of it, which is why I got the milky white ones.
Right. I bought the clear ones. They have yellowed. And it did not take long for them to yellow either. And it normally they'll tell you, like, non-yellowing.
Yeah. Maybe going through the process and heating it up, maybe that'll help deter it. I don't know.
No, because the castings come out the same color. It's possible that I got a bad batch.
That's possible.
But I haven't seen a clear batch since. They've all been like the one I have.
Huh. Weird.
And for those who are curious, these are more like PLA plastic. They're not like ABS. Mm-hmm. ABS is going to be harder than what this is. These still have a little bit of give, like a tiny bit of give to them. They're like kind of in between ABS and hot glue.
Interesting.
If you leave them outside in the Texas heat, I'm pretty sure they will warp.
They will warp. I can assure you of this.
So that will be my project, and also another check mark off of Amber's use up all of her supplies that are existing list.
Yay! Get through those supplies.
The mod melts have been sitting in there for a while because I don't have a use for them. You're supposed to use them to mold small things. Well, most of the props and such that I build are large.
Mm-hmm.
So at best, I could make buttons out of them, and that's about it.
I've been using them for fun little detail work on, like, my smaller props and things, like how you do all of your lovely fine filigree and elven work with puffy paints. I basically do the same thing with mod melts.
Fair.
It's a little challenging, but it's been entertaining, needless to say.
The reason I don't do that is because the pieces that I do it on need to remain flexible.
Have you not tried it? Because they are kind of flexible. I mean, they don't, like, you can't do, like, a 90-degree bend. Obvious.
These need to be 90 degree bend.
Okay. You're weird.
Because most of the time it's on clothing, so it's going to fold around the body.
Oh, I'm not going to do it on clothing. Good Lord, no. I'm going to do it on props and armor.
Most of the scroll work that I'm doing is on soft things. It's on textiles.
That's different. No, I'm talking about hard things.
No, when I do that, I cut it out of fun.
I know you do.
With a manicure scissor.
You go... Yeah.
I do, and it hurts my hands so much, but it looks really good.
It looks really good. We need to get a different system for you, though.
I need a Cricut.
Yeah, that would help. But
ultimately, that's what I need, is I need a Cricut.
A Cricut would take care of that, yes.
I need a lot of things. I also need some spare money.
Adulting!
It's spare money for cosplay. Let's put it that way.
There we go.
All right. That's my update. What you got?
Nothing. I've been cutting out scales. That's what I've been doing.
Oh, random aside. Speaking of other updates, I also found another potential food to have at Nick Cage Con.
Oh, perfect. I love that we keep adding to this. This is great. We're going to make it a thing.
Macaroni and cheese ice cream.
Gross.
Because it's like the flame on Ghost Rider's head. It's the same color. It is literally the same color.
There is literally a thing on the shelves now that is macaroni and cheese ice cream, which just sounds disgusting.
It is a real thing.
It is a real thing.
This is not a joke.
Not a joke.
And apparently it sold out within, I think they said, a couple of hours from when they launched it.
People are willing to try the strange food combos, and I just say, ew.
They really are. You know, more power to them if they want to eat mac and cheese flavored ice cream. Go for it. If I wanted that, I would probably just freeze macaroni and cheese itself and eat it.
Gross. All right, new topic.
You can have that at Nick Cage Con. Anyway, speaking of cons.
Yes. It's good.
Good and bad cons.
Good and bad cons. We're going to get jumping into our topic today, which is how to spot a trash con and what are the warning signs. And given that conventions are starting back up again, there were a couple that were just last weekend. There are some this weekend that are in person, whether or not you're vaccinated. Some of them require masks, some of them don't. And basically, this is a kind of our tip list to kind of help with newcomers and those who are returning to the con scene to kind of weed out the trash cons from the tried and true cons that are not there to be awful. Because unfortunately, some of the trash cons are there to take your money and just scam you and just be awful, awful businesses because that's what they do. And so we want to make sure that people are safe, that they're aware, that they're taking care of themselves, and that they're spending their money in the best places possible and not supporting the trash cons. I actually got so incensed by trash cons popping up again. Like, I have a tirade on Discord between Amber and I, and I even made a definition for what a trash con is. I made two definitions. In a noun and an adjective. Amber, would you like to hear my definitions?
Of course I would.
Okay, so trash con. Noun. A convention that has built up a pile of garbage from years of ignoring major problems. The pile gets bigger the longer issues are not resolved, producing new issues. Example in a sentence. ABC event is a trash con. And then as an adjective. An event that smells foul but continues to act like they don't reek. TrashCon ABC Expo is horrible and we should stop attending it.
May I have the language, please?
English.
TrashCon, T-R. No, this is not the National Spelling Bee, I'm sorry.
But that was funny.
I do try. So, just a little bit of clarification on what you guys are about to hear in our discussion. This can apply to any convention.
Yes.
It doesn't necessarily have to be anime, comic conventions, literary conventions, political conventions. It could literally
be any convention. Convention, expo, Comic-Con, whatever.
Right. Now that said, we're probably going to aim this a little towards the conventions we attend.
Right.
So it will probably end up pointing a little bit more towards anime cons, comic cons.
Yeah, more fan convention stuff, less on the other end of the spectrum. But you can even apply this to like work seminars, because I know I've been duped by work seminars before that say one thing, but then you go and you actually attend and it's something entirely different and a complete waste of your time and money. So needless to say, it can apply in many, many places.
Indeed. And the other thing is that we realize that this is going to be highly subjective.
Yes.
What we consider to be a trash con, based on research, is still going to be our opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And you may disagree with that, and that's perfectly okay. All we're doing here is just giving you the tools that you can use to evaluate it for yourself. So with that said, shall we begin?
Yeah. I think the first and foremost thing that we should really tell people to do is to put effort into researching the convention before you buy the pass. which sounds so stinking obvious, but it's kind of surprising how few people take the time to do it. They're just like, oh, my friends are going to this event, or they're going to this expo or this Comic-Con, and I want to go with them. So you spend the money on the pass, getting the hotel room. If it's out of state, you have to get the travel in, you budget for the food. You do all this work to get ready for the convention without taking the time to actually research the convention and see what their history is, what their past is like. Do they have any lawsuits against them? I mean, just really basic things that you should probably look into before you decide, yeah, I'll drop $80 on a weekend badge, no problem. It's just take 5 minutes to Google, people. You'll be really surprised what you'll find about a convention, because it's all there on the internet.
Likewise, if they're giving away a free pass, you'll probably want to ask some questions too.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. Free passes are nice, but you do have to kind of wonder, okay, why are you giving me free passes? What's your history? I got to know these things.
What are you selling?
Yes. It's just good. It's just something, a way to be safe for yourself too, because you're throwing your money at something and you don't know where it's going. What's going to be happening with it? Is it going to be distributed to the convention? Is it going up to the higher ups? Like, what? Where is my $80 going? And that's just the base price.
Right. Because we can tell you from experience, conventions are not free to run.
No.
Single events are not free to run.
No.
And speaking of researching the con and doing that research, the convention's own website is a great place to start.
Mm-hmm.
It is not the end-all be-all of all news that there is about the convention. It may or may not be true, anything that you see on the website.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of commentary, obviously the factual stuff, like, we're going to hold it on these dates, we're going to hold it at this hotel, here's how much the hotel's cost, all that's going to be factual. We're talking just about commentary about the convention, or anything that's giving an opinion about the convention.
Mm-hmm.
So start with the convention website, but you'll also want to migrate to other sites, things like forums, especially, say, cosplayer forums, because cosplayers like to talk. Yes, we do. And we especially like to talk about conventions, those that we're going to be attending. You can go also to social media, things like Twitter, things like Facebook, things like Instagram, because people also really like to post about their experiences with photos and documentation whenever they attend these cons. People like to document their journey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hey, I was at this con, selfie pic. Hey, I attended this event, screenshot.
Right.
People will document everything, including the stuff that maybe the con may not want you to see.
Yes.
Or maybe stuff that the con does want you to see.
It goes both ways.
Exactly. And those are things that you're probably not going to see on the convention's website, even if the convention hosts its own forums. And even then, we'll talk about this more later, but you also have to worry about some of those posts being deleted.
Yeah.
Before you have the chance to actually read them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there are individual people's blogs, websites, things like that. Media can also be a good indicator of what a con is like, because those who are media presence at a con, their job is to cover the con, and ideally they're supposed to cover it from an objective point of view, so both the good and the bad. They're not there to kind of put a nice shiny patina on the convention. They're there to tell you what the convention is like, the
right.
Nitty-gritty. So all good sources to kind of just get a whole idea of what it would be like to go.
To kind of add off of that, something that you should do too when you're doing your searches and your basic researching, whether this is on social media or on your search engine of choice, type in the name of the con, problems, or hashtag boycott name of con, and see if anything pops up. Because if something does pop up, you definitely want to take your time and look into it, because it may mean that there is more going on than what is being shown on their fancy dancy website and social media posts. Maybe there's some seedier things going on that are like, I don't want to support this mess. And you really don't know until you type in con, what are their problems? Because people are happy to take all the praises of a con, but they're also very happy to share all the bad times with the con too. And they're not ashamed of it.
And these days you may also want to look up the hashtag cancel.
Yes.
And then the name of the convention.
That's a very good one. That one's been cropping up more and more lately.
Whenever something disagreeable happens at a convention that usually affects more than one person, that hashtag will start to spring up.
And it's usually something big. People don't like to throw around those unless it's a really big or a major issue that has a great impact on attendees or the staff members or just the community as a whole.
Right. And if for some reason you research a convention and you can't find anything negative about them, then potentially that convention could be going around and deleting those negative comments, as we mentioned before. Now, the convention will only have control over their own website, so they can only delete what's on their site. But you can also have staff or other volunteers associated with your con go to other sites and request those things to be taken down. And sometimes the website will comply, sometimes not, totally up to them. But in and of itself, I would say it's probably maybe not a red flag. How about an orange flag? That a convention has nothing negative said about it. Every convention has problems.
Yeah.
Even if they're little problems like, I didn't like the food options that were served. It doesn't make the entire convention bad or a negative experience, but it is something that convention attendees will usually mention because they would like it improved. So it's still constructive criticism. Every con should have something that it can improve. If it's perfect online, I have questions.
It looks really fishy when you see that all the comments are great, wonderful, positive, 100% five-star reviews. It's like, no con is perfect. That's not possible.
Right. And that may point to, not definitively, but it may point to media control. Or damage control in some cases.
Right. So something else you should look out for when it comes to their website is, do they have a refund policy when it comes to their badges? Now, I know that this area can be a little bit iffy because some notable cons like San Diego Comic-Con, BlizzCon, and some of the bigger events don't do refunds any longer because the passes are so difficult to get that it's basically a one-and-done deal. They do have exchange offers, though, where it's like, okay, you can't go, so you can exchange your pass with somebody else. So at least they have some kind of quote-unquote refunding system. It just may not be the traditional refund that you're accustomed to. Even still, you should go ahead and check and see if they do have a refund policy, how open and transparent they are about those refunds, how long those take, because that kind of tells you about the quality of their staff and their accounting and lets you know, hey, they're at least being on the up and up on this, because emergencies happen, life happens, and if you need to get a refund on your badge, you need to know what happens to it. Do they roll it over to the next year? I mean, that's totally fine. Do they allow you to trade it with somebody else so that way someone else can go in your name? That's fine too. Or are they just flat out saying, nope, sorry, we got your money, bye.
Now, at least personally for me, and this is my own opinion, I'm not speaking for Val or Cospod, but I actually find that if a convention were to only have a transfer policy, that would be an orange flag for me. Because not only does it mean that for sure your money is gone, like you cannot get it back, there's no refund policy, and there's no exchange or give to another person policy where that person can give you money. In other words, if you roll it over to the next year. Because not only does that mean the con has my money no matter what, but it also drives that person to basically have to plan to attend the con next year, whether they want to or can or not, or lose that money. And I know at least for my own self, I don't know a year in advance if I have that time off.
Right.
If I'll even have a job, if I'll be financially able to attend that con, or if anything else comes up in the realm of life, you know, vehicle breaks down and I can't travel or whatever, just anything that happens. I would not look kindly on a convention that did not have some sort of additional either refund, exchange, or transfer to another person policy rather than just roll over to the next year. I can understand, especially with pandemic, cons wanting to roll it over because they didn't make any money this year and they didn't have the con in a lot of cases.
And that was basically the policy for the vast majority of cons was like, hey, we know you got your badge, we're going to roll it over. But a lot of cons were also really cool about offering a refund too as another option. I think most people took the rollover thinking, I'll go next year. But a lot of them were really good about offering a refund. Some of them not so much. Some of them were the trash cons, not so much.
And generally, those cons were very upfront about their policies. They were very clearly legible on their website. It wasn't hard to find. It wasn't buried in fine print. You could easily find it. And even then, if you had extenuating circumstances, generally they have a contact email where you can email them and negotiate for extenuating circumstances.
Exactly.
That's cool. Customer service.
Customer service is a big, good, awesome thing.
All right. Speaking of customer service, part of customer service is communication. And this means putting out information for con attendees to be able to plan their convention. I know that not everybody plans everything in advance. Some people just like to go and enjoy the con. And this is nothing against that at all. This is for people like me who like to at least put check marks by a few different panels and basically organize, okay, when's my break time? When's my lunch time? Do I have enough time to make it to this panel? Change locations, that sort of thing. And for that, you need a schedule. And this is generally posted either on the con's website or it's posted in their app. And a lot more cons are moving to mobile apps now. So if you don't find it on their website, don't panic. It may just be in their mobile app that you have to download.
Right.
Now, granted, for those that don't have mobile phones, this is a problem. So something else to think about.
Right.
But if your con does not have the schedule and you are 2 weeks out from the con, there is a problem.
Big problem.
That may point to a lack of organization on the back end or staffing issues, because it means there's not sufficient staff to be able to answer the to solve the problem. Or something really big happened on the back end that is so detrimental that it basically knocked out the momentum of the con being prepared for attendees. That they basically are doing damage control somewhere. This is not to say that if the con doesn't have the schedule up that terrible things happened, it's automatically trash con. No, it's just another flag that keep in the back of your head that I don't know if I want to attend this con if they're not organized enough to either get the schedule out or tell you why it's not out. If they have good reason, you know, somebody had a death in the family, cool. Communication is key. Just let us know as attendees what's going on.
Because even if you can't get the schedule up, if you can at least say, here are what the panels are going to be and this is what they're going to be about, we're having problems with our website or whatever, like give a solid reason why 2 weeks before the con you don't have a schedule up. But if you can also just give us like panel names and descriptions, that at least gets attendees excited. They're like, oh, well, this is going to be coming up. This is going to be cool. Like, I want to sit in on this. We know what main events is now. Just something to get the momentum going, even if you're having problems on the back end, because then you're going to look less fishy. Since we're still talking about their website, another thing to look out for is for a confusing media policy. And you may think, well, that doesn't really apply to me. I'm not media. But just hold on a second here. So if you look at their media policy, it may be that the con looks maybe anti-media, meaning that they're really restrictive on media passes. They don't like having bloggers in there or people photographing the event. No videoing, no nothing. They just don't want people talking about it. And you're like, well, that seems kind of strange, because if you're a convention and you want to make money, you need media in there. You need press in there to help promote the event. Even if they share some of the bad stuff, usually if they're going along with it, they're probably invested in the future of the con too and all the nerdy things that are going on. So they're going to talk it up and they're going to say some cool stuff that happens too. Get a chance to interview the guests and maybe that'll influence people to come along and check it out. I mean, it's kind of strange to have a con that says, no, we don't want media in our events. It's like, why?
Only certain media.
Or, and that's the other one, elite media, meaning that they will only take the highest establishment of certain newspapers or podcasters or TV stations or radio stations. If you are a small town blogger with maybe 10,000 views a month, which is still phenomenal for any blog, but the con is like, no, that's not enough for us. You need to have 100,000 views. You need to have 1 million views and 5 million Twitter followers. But you're a small town con with maybe 5,000 people. You sure about this? that's also kind of a red flag there that you kind of want to go, something here is not adding up. Why are you trying to only push for the elite media outlets that are the least likely to show up to these events? They're not making themselves friendly to their local community, basically. It's the local small town nerdy newspapers and the nerdy bloggers and the nerdy podcasters that are going to be the ones who are going to talk up the most about your con. And they have the most amount of influence compared to ABC in New York.
And honestly, as a podcast, we've had experience with this. We will not name the cons. But I would like to point out to the press departments at conventions that follower count, listener count, etc., does not a podcast make.
No.
Because there are all sorts of things that can affect the number of followers you have, the number of watches or listens that you get, especially with the advent of bots. You can buy followers now.
It's so easy. It is so easy to buy bots and followers. It is ridiculous. It's kind of disgusting.
Right. And so you can't really go by those numbers. It's kind of the whole, do you believe everything you read on the internet kind of thing. And so I think it would be better of them to judge based on the content of the podcast.
Right.
Or the newspaper or the blog or whatever. Like, go read it. Go look at who you're inviting to the con. That's more important than the number of eyeballs you have on it.
Exactly.
Which may or may not actually be human eyeballs, for that matter. Speaking of policies.
Yes.
This one is really important, especially recently. If the convention does not have a clear and coherent harassment policy. In other words, what constitutes harassment? What should a person do if they feel they are experiencing harassment? What are the consequences of this? What will happen to both the person reporting and the person being reported against? All of these really should be spelled out for anyone to be able to read in plain view, easy to find. And ideally, it should actually be posted at the convention itself as well.
Yes.
Say on posters or banners or something to where convention attendees can read it. So it's not just limited to the website for those who may not have web access. And this is both for the protection of attendees and for those who are running the con. Because the person doing the harassing could be a staffer, could be someone at the convention. You know, there could be all sorts of issues going on where we don't have the context or backstory, but something happened and there needs to be a way of reporting that. And reporting that without fear of backlash or any sort of retribution for having said so, especially if it ends up being an attendee reporting a staffer, then the attendee should feel secure that the convention's not going to toss them out for having said something negative against somebody helping run the con. So that needs to be really clearly spelled out. And also for legal reasons as well, because these do have legal issues that go along with them.
Yeah. I went ahead and linked this in our chat, but I wanted to give a shout out to the Cosplayer Survivor Support Network. We've interviewed Trixie, who was one of the founders of it, I know it was last season or the season before that. It's been a little while.
It was last season.
Yeah. They have some fantastic resources specifically talking about harassment policy, what cons can do. They have a list of a lot of major conventions in the United States and what their policies are. And they actually have a grading system. So you could use this as a great resource to start with and say, okay, what does CSSN say? What's the scorecard for this con? How is their harassment policy? So that's something I definitely recommend that people use for their tool.
Yep. Add it to your research list that we mentioned earlier of places to visit to go ahead and research the con before you buy your ticket. Speaking of buying tickets,
another thing you should look out for as a red flag is if you have to purchase multiple individual passes for separate events. Now, again, I understand that some cons are doing this more and more now to kind of get them that little extra money, because, you know, it's all about the money at the end of the day. But when you're having to spend $80 on a 2 or 3 day pass to this con, you kind of expect a good chunk of the stuff to be all inclusive, like the main events, going into the artist alley, going to the dealer's den, going to panels, things like the autographs. Yeah, you have to pay extra for that because that's extra money that's going to the actors. They're not making any commission money off of the ticket price itself. That's different. But most of the stuff you kind of expect to be kind of all inclusive in the package. If a con starts going, okay, well, if you want to sit and watch this band play, it'll be an extra $15 ticket. If you want to go to any of these 18-plus panels, it's going to be an extra $10 ticket. If you want to go to the artist alley, it's another $5 ticket for each day. When you start adding up all these little charges that just don't make sense, it's almost like, why am I even buying a badge if I have to buy another badge or another pass to get into an additional event? It doesn't quite make sense, and that really should hackle your red flags at that point. Con is there to kind of really squeeze every dollar out of you, and that should not be the case.
And we're speaking generally of events at the con where you're not receiving something materially extra. So things like tournaments for gaming, perfectly fine to charge extra for those if you are receiving something like booster packs or if it's to help fund a prize pool. That we understand. You are getting something material in exchange for the extra money. But if it's just a part of the con and you're not getting anything extra for it, they shouldn't be separating them out like airlines do nowadays and charging literally a la carte for everything.
Right.
If you're going to do that, reduce the general price of the ticket, the ticket it takes to get into the con. Then go do your a la carte thing. But
You
if you're doing
balance it out
both,
a little bit more. Because if you're going to drop $100 on a ticket and then $10 to be able to go to main events, I would just be like, no, you already got my 100. Why do you need more out of it?
yeah, you're going to start pricing people out of your convention and limiting it to the wealthy, effectively. And speaking of separate events, we know that conventions are holding multiple tracks at multiple times in different parts of the hotel. Lots of stuff is going on all at once. With that said, generally we're accepting as attendees if a panelist here or there has to cancel for any reason, life gets in the way, couldn't get off of work, family emergency, whatever.
It happens.
Life happens. We get that. If you have mass cancellations, like an entire track goes down, or an entire chunk of time is suddenly gone because you had a whole series of panelists cancel, I would actually want to contact those panelists and ask if it was something about the con. Because generally, there's not that much of a coincidence that panelists who are not related or not friends, haven't ever met each other, all cancel all at once. Major red flag, especially as somebody who really enjoys attending panels. If I found out something about a con that I didn't like that, I'd probably cancel as a panelist too. Because as a panelist, your name gets associated with that convention.
Or if it's a bunch of celebrity guests that pull out at the same time, like 5, 10, 15 of them drop out of nowhere, it's like something's going on. Something's not right here.
Especially if they're not from the same agency.
Yeah.
If they're from the same agency, okay, still an issue.
Still an issue.
Different agencies, major red flag.
So along the same lines, when it comes to if there's last minute cancellation, panel changes, we know that people tend to be very, very vocal when they leave their comments about a convention, both good and bad. So as you're doing your research, if you find out that you see nothing but a slew of negative reviews from attendees, from panelists, from vendors, from artists, from staff members, that should be a very big sign of do not go to this con. Do not spend your money here.
Do
And
not pass go. Do not spend $200.
exactly. And just take the time to really sit in and dig in. Maybe the complaints are very minor. It could just be constructive criticism. And if you see that the con has taken the time to respond and address the concern and say, hey, we'll work better on this, then that's usually not a bad thing. That's like, okay, they're willing to improve. That's cool. But if they don't respond to anything, if it's a lot of the same comments year after year and doesn't seem like there's been any changes, or worse, they start backtalking to the person who made the negative comment, that should be your no-go sign of, I don't want to spend my money here. Find somewhere else to go.
And in those comments, you'll want to make sure that you actually read them.
Yes.
Not just that you see, okay, a wall of negative keywords, but actually read what they say. You also want to make sure these are being posted by actual people and not bots, because remember, you can hire bots to not only inflate views, but you can also hire them to post reviews mm-hmm. about other cons that are maybe a competitor of yours. When you read these, look to see if they perchance are addressing either aggressive, uncaring, or even harassment from convention staffers. Because generally, the convention, when it hires staff, are supposed to go through, screen them, make sure that they're the right people to be hiring. Because not only are they there to run the convention, they're also representative of that convention. They're the face, in a very physical and literal sense, mm-hmm. of the convention. And so if these particular volunteers treat attendees badly, and I'm speaking in a general way, not just, you know, this person is having a bad day, which still, if you're having a bad day, you shouldn't take it out on an attendee.
Right.
But if there is a pattern of this, then that should definitely be a red flag for you. And like you mentioned, people tend to be very vocal in their negative reviews. They especially tend to be vocal whenever they deal with staff.
Yeah, and in the same way, con chairs as well as the con directors, they're not immune from being aggressive and uncaring staff members. They can be just as bad, if not worse. And it's something to kind of also keep an eye out for. If it's a very open and transparent convention, you'll know immediately on their website who their con chair is and who's running and managing the event. It may just be a group of people. It may be a full management company like Fan Expo. That's all held by the Fan Expo brand. That makes sense. It's worth taking the time to looking into the history of the con chair and the con directors. Who are the people at the top of the totem pole? Because they make all the decisions at the end of the day. They're the ones that are reaping the most out of all of the con shenanigans. So what is their history? What have they done? Is this their first convention? Is this their 50th convention? Do they have a history of successful conventions? What are those other conventions like? Do they have problems at those other conventions? Does the person have, unfortunately, a history of criminal activity? Because there are con chairs out there who run shady cons, who have a bad criminal history and have done some bad things, but they think they can get away with it if they just go to another state and start up a new con and a new venture. It's important things that you have to think about, because if the person at the top is making all the bad decisions, it's going to trickle down and affect everybody else. It doesn't matter how wonderful this one staff member is when everyone else around that staff member is a problem because of the problem at the top. People don't really think about it, and they're like, well, I'm not really supporting the con chair. I'm just supporting this person. I'm supporting this panelist. I'm supporting this cosplayer. What you don't understand is your money isn't going to just the cosplayer. It's definitely not going to that panelist unless they got paid to be there, which is very unlikely. It's going to the con chair. It really is at the end of the day. So whoever's in charge, you need to research them.
And likewise with the cosplayer, they're also probably not getting paid.
Yeah.
They might be getting a comp ticket. And then if they're really lucky and it's a nice con, a per diem. But generally, they're just comped.
They're just comped. Or if they're able to have a booth for free so they can sell some stuff, so they're making money somehow.
Right. It's still comped, though. They're not paying. They're not getting paid, in other words.
Exactly.
So if you encounter a con that has all these posts on social media, on forums, on blog posts, maybe even on the convention website's own forums, and you see that there's just a history of negativity, look at what the convention says in response, if anything, to these posts. It's not just, do they leave the posts up as opposed to deleting them, but does the convention respond at all?
Mm-hmm.
And if they do respond, read their words. It's both about what they say in response and how they say it.
Yes.
There is an art to media response. This is why conventions often have their own PR department specifically to handle these sorts of things. Because again, no convention should have an entirely 100% positive review. So this will happen from time to time at any convention.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that you should be able to handle in a constructive way that takes into account what that person is telling you. You don't necessarily have to agree or disagree, but there is a certain customer service in at least accepting the feedback and telling them you will look into it.
Mm-hmm.
So if the con appears that they're taking their commenters seriously and that they're actually going to look into these things and they're not just blowing them off, or worse, reactive in a very passive-aggressive manner that attacks that person for saying these things and starts casting doubt on the commenters, that's even worse.
Mm-hmm.
And it's reflective not only of that staffer, but again, the PR department, the convention behind them, and maybe even the person at the top that we just spoke of, because again, policy comes from the top, and they're all going to, unless they're a rogue agent, obey
mm-hmm.
whatever the policy is for that con. So that tells you a little something about how the con is run.
And depending on how that convention is run, it may lead them into some lawsuits. So another thing to kind of look into is to see if the con has any pending or active lawsuits against them. It's incredibly rare that it's done out of malice. It usually means something bad has happened. Maybe they didn't pay their bills on time.
Something legally bad.
Something very legally bad. Something very illegal happened. Lawsuits in these cases are usually not frivolous. It's because it's for a serious reason. And it's worth taking that couple extra minutes of Googling and looking into it. A lot of it is public information, especially as conventions start moving more and more into public spaces or into city convention centers. So that makes all the information about any legal issues available to the public because it's involving the city and they have to be transparent for stuff like that. So you can actually go and search this information. You don't have to really pay any money to get access to it. So that's kind of nice. So it makes it much more easier for you to get what you need and determine, okay, this con has a history of not paying their vendors for all the foodstuffs that is going on at the convention. Do I want to continue giving this con my money if they're not going to pay the right people?
Including people like the hotel that they're at.
Yeah, because that's happened. DashCon!
That happened at Nerd Year's Eve.
Yeah.
They had people locked out of their hotel rooms because the con didn't pay, and so they turned off all the room keys.
Yeah.
Of course, I say that because that con does not exist anymore. So there is no risk of tarnishing its reputation further.
Right.
Now, these things that we have mentioned are all things that you would look for while you are researching whether or not to attend a con. The attendees are not the only people who are doing this research. Guests are also doing this. And we both have experience with this. When you are invited to guest at a con, one of the first things that we do is we look up that con. What kind of a con is it? What sort of people are associated with it? What is the reputation of the con? Is this something that we want to associate our names with as guests? Because you kind of end up being an extension of the con in a way. You're almost like a staffer in that sense. You're just not getting paid and you don't have a staff badge. But you are still representing as the face of the con. And in fact, generally your visage will be seen in marketing for that con. So you'll definitely be associated with that con. So as a guest, you want to do that research. As an attendee, when I research what guests are going to be at the con, and I see either very few guests listed for a con of that size, granted, you'll want to take that into account, or if it's the same guests every year
yeah.
and nothing changes. Now, we're not talking like a couple of the same guests. We're talking almost the entire slate is the same people every year.
Right. Because some people have like con staples that come every single year because they're locals or, you know, they just have a great relationship with the convention. And that's fine. Nothing wrong with that.
Right. And occasionally, there may be changes in guests because sometimes gigs come up.
Yeah.
Or, life gets in the way and you just can't make it for whatever reason. But if you literally have the same people every year, or you have next to no guests, maybe some of them even canceled. In fact, since we spoke earlier about handfuls of panelists canceling, same thing with guests. If you have a whole bevy of guests cancel and they're not all working on the same project, so that okay, it's not the con's fault, they're all working, that would also be a red flag. Because it also speaks potentially to the quality of that con, because you know that the guests are also doing the same research that the attendees are.
So, from the convention and attendee side of things, if you're somebody who likes to participate in contests, whether it's the cosplay contest, AMV, Annie Idol, maybe you like to do some of the gaming tournaments, something else to look out for when it comes to the convention is seeing if the contest information or the tournament info is incredibly limited on the website or if it's constantly changing the rules. Like you go one day and you think, okay, I can sign up for this, do, 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 do. And then 5 days later, the rules change on you. That's always really fishy and really sketchy. And a lot of times the trash cons do this to kind of give people the false illusion that like, oh, we really know what we're doing, but we really don't know what we're doing. And they tend to hide prizes that way too. Like they'll say this is going to be the grand prize at one point, and then they'll change it later on. And then they'll change it again, and then they'll change it again. So you never really know what the grand prizes are. So it's almost like, what am I even doing with this? What is this insanity and nonsense here? Anytime that you see the information change so frequently, it should raise some alarm bells. Because something like it, because Amber and I have done this with a cosplay contest for 5 years running, we get this. Once you have something out there in writing, that's it. It is done. That should be the final word. There should be no further changes. Because it takes one screenshot for people to remember. So if we start making changes on the fly, we're going to look inconsistent, or we're not going to look professional, and people are not going to trust us. We're going to have fewer entries because we can't make up our mind on what the hell the cosplay contest rules are. And that's not fair to the cosplayers, and it's certainly not fair to your staff members who have to keep learning new rules every week because you keep changing your mind. Once it's out there, it's out there. And if a con can't stick with that, probably means that this is not just a problem with the tournament. This is probably a problem that applies to other areas of the convention.
And we do meet multiple times before we even put out the
Oh
rules.
God,
We go
yes.
through and do multiple edits, and we consider anything that may need changing, may need clarification, so that we're not putting out something vague like grand prize is a cash prize, but we don't say how much.
Yeah, you need to give like solid dollar amounts. A more legitimate con will actually tell you what your prizes are going to be. If they leave everything vague and nebulous, like
Prize pack.
prize pack. What's in the prize pack? I would like to know. Is it rip-off anime DVDs? Because no, thank you.
And we have been to cons that do that.
Yeah, I've won some of those.
Indeed. Been there, done that. So you have to be very secure in what you put out there, and you can't go back and change it later, even if you want to clarify it. Nope,
Nope.
no changes. You have to just write it down for next year as something that you can improve. And not only will it reflect poorly on the con, but if you do something like false advertisement, you probably also won't be invited back to run it again next year.
Exactly.
And speaking of putting that information out in public where everybody can see it, the last point that we wanted to make on this is, drum roll, if your con has multiple pages on their website that are listed as something like coming soon, soon to be announced, TBA, or anything that's similar to that, 1 month before the event, you have a problem on your
Have a
hands,
big problem
both
on your
as an
hands.
attendee and as a convention.
There's some big, that's the siren call of woo, woo, this is bad, people. Something is seriously wrong.
And this is a general thing. We're not taking into account pandemic because we understand that plenty of conventions have basically had to scrap plans at the last minute because public health regulations change.
Sure, that's different.
That's understandable.
That's different.
Pandemic is a different thing. This is in normal times.
Mm-hmm.
If you cannot put out accurate information 1 month before you are due to go live, perhaps you should not be going live. This is not an F it, we're going to do it live situation.
No, you can't. Not with a convention.
You don't improv a convention.
You can't.
You have to plan it. You have to run it according to very structured framework because you are asking for failure if you basically throw up TBA for your schedule or TBA for your guests or worse, TBA for your location.
Oh, man.
If you can't secure a location for your con, don't run the con.
Don't even. Oh, that hurts.
You do not want to put your staff, your guests, your attendees, your volunteers. You don't want to put the entire staff through that. And go, oh, sorry. They decided to cancel our contract 2 weeks before the con. Now we don't have a place to go. Well, you're not going to have a con.
And that has happened before. I can't remember the name of the convention, but it was a couple of years ago. I remember the Twitter outcry over it, where literally the con lost their location 2 weeks before the event.
Yes.
But we also found out it was a scam con, too, because they were promising all these big, huge theatrics and were not following through on any of it. And it was just a nightmare.
Didn't they relocate into like a warehouse or a strip mall?
That's a different one. You're thinking of a different one. There's two different. There's two been. There's
different
two
trash con.
There's been two of them. And that's
unfortunate. You can tell this is a red flag.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need to be able to have these things in concrete. If you're a month out, we understand changes.
Yeah.
Like you may need to make a minor tweak to a schedule. Maybe you'll have a guest that canceled, or maybe a new guest came in to take their place because somebody else had life happen.
Mm-hmm.
Perfectly fine. Small changes, fine. If you don't have anything out there, reevaluate, please.
Because a location canceling on you 2 to 3 weeks before the event will never ever happen unless you, the convention, screwed up royally.
Or if said facility, you know, burned down in a fire. That's understandable.
That's completely different. But like, if the convention center, if the hotel cancels your contract a month out, something is seriously wrong with the con. Do not go.
Yes. And of course, just like we mentioned, attendees are doing their research. Guests are doing their research. Hopefully, anybody who is invited to be staff is also doing their research. And likewise,
cosplayers.
Volunteers. The hotel is also going to vet whoever is applying to hold an event at your facility. And I know this as having been a staffer firsthand. They ask a lot of questions.
Yeah, they do.
Of you. And you have to have things like liability insurance.
Mm-hmm.
You have to pony up a certain amount of money as a deposit, not just for the hotel, but you also have to agree to book a certain number of rooms at capacity. You have to agree that you will have a certain number of attendees that attend this. The hotel may ask for a percentage of your profits. All of these things have to be set before you can even sign the contract. So the hotel's done its research too. If they cancel, something didn't come up in their research that's big.
It's a big deal. It's a big deal that they are willing to cancel a very expensive contract.
Yes, because those are not free to cancel.
No. So all in all, the thing to take away from this is to make sure you do your research, whether you are a first timer to a convention or you've been going to conventions for 20 years now. Every con has their problems. Some of them are really tiny and they can be fixed. Some of them are major red flags that'll make you go, oh, this is a trash con. You don't want to go and support it. If anything, as you're doing your research, if at any time something in your gut says, this doesn't feel right, go with your gut. Your gut's telling you something. Don't try to argue with it. It's saying, this doesn't seem like it's a good idea. Maybe I shouldn't go to this con. Go with that feeling, because your feeling is probably going to be correct.
If it smells like a dumpster fire, if it looks like a dumpster fire,
It is
probably a dumpster fire.
And
yes, there is every possibility that you could have the blast of your life and it could be great. There's also a risk that you could not only lose a lot of money, but have a terrible time and it would leave lasting memories with you, which is really not what you want. You want to have a good time, especially if you're going to spend that kind of money and put that kind of time into it. Because a convention isn't just about money. You're basically saying, I'm going to spend a whole weekend at this venue with all these people doing all of these things. You want to have fun. And these are just different tools that you can use to make sure that you're getting the most for your investment.
That is a good way to sum it up.
The more you know.
I like that I did it in the opposite direction from the way you did it, so that'll be fun. I got to put the rainbow up now. Oh, shoot.
Mirror, yin and yang.
It's fine. We do that a lot. It's okay.
I know. This is why I'm a rebel and you are the Empire.
Hell yeah. Sith rule, baby.
I think I'm going to be Sith to my stomach. Anyways. If you guys would like to give us your experiences and your opinions on what you think makes a trash con, please keep it family friendly. We know that some experiences at trash cons can be a little much.
Much.
Our show is family friendly. But if you would like to join in the conversation via any of our social media, which of course you can find here.
If you are watching us right now, you can look at everything that's located underneath Amber to the far left that-a-way. If you are listening to us, visit us at cospod.org, on Facebook and Instagram at Cosplay Podcasts, and on YouTube and Twitter as CosPodcasts.
And of course, you are welcome to email us, podcast@cospod.org, where you'll get an answer from both of us. Please don't ask us to share convention stories.
No.
We have too many of them.
We have many of them. I think a couple of episodes from now, we'll probably just do one where it's just convention stories, because we haven't done one of those.
We'll do it in our After Dark After session.
Oh, there
convention
we go.
Horror stories, because it's Halloween themed.
Got lots of those.
Convention After Dark. Look forward to it here in about 3 months from now.
So soon. Oh, my Lord.
Otherwise, please stay safe out there, everybody. Please stay healthy as best as you can. Keep working on that cosplay so that we can all see each other ASAP at the local convention of your choice. Otherwise, we will see you guys next time in episode 238. Happy cosplaying, everybody.